welcome to the 45th episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're messing with the format again, and I hope you like the changes. Going briefer, going tighter, going just one or two songs per show. I promise people we're going to do this until we get it right. This week we're casting our interview net way out from the Center for Science Outreach, on up into Ontario, Canada. I was browsing podcasts at iTunes trying to see just why Snacks for the Brain isn't showing up in the proper directories when I found a podcast suspiciously
and initially irritatingly
named Brain Food. What? What? How can this be? Right hacked off I was until I actually gave this show a listen. It was good. It is good. And different from Snacks for the Brain. And pretty tasty in its own right. I emailed Kyle Butler, the podcaster, and he responded quickly. Set up a Skype chat with him, and what you hear is what we talked about Tuesday afternoon. Here's the chat. You'll be doing yourself a favor if you sort of put on eavesdropping ears here, because there's a little bit of, well, there's maybe a lot of distortion here. And just pretend you're doing a little wiretapping. It'll be just fine. Enjoy.
Hello.
Hey, Kyle. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. How's my sound level doing?
It sounds great.
Good.
Looks like I've got my hot recorder running, and God willing, and the creek don't rise, we'll that's what we can use.
Great.
So, nice to meet you. I'm Scott Merrick from the Snacks for the Brain podcast, and you're Kyle Butler from Brain Food.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thanks for accepting the call. I often get denied, you know, so. Now, where are you, Kyle?
I live in Ontario, Canada.
Oh, so you're in the city?
It's actually more in south of Toronto, kind of in the country.
Oh, wonderful. Yay. Out there. You must have pretty good bandwidth. We've got a good connection.
Yeah, it's actually pretty decent.
Now, you're a medical student, is that true?
Actually, a computer engineering student over at the University of Guelph.
Oh,
well, it's actually, it's a town that's probably, oh goodness, it's probably 45 minutes south of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult, it's kind of west.
So you do the Brain Food podcast, and you've been doing it for how many shows now?
Since early June, so what are we up to, episode 13 now?
Yeah.
About to put out episode 14 tonight, so.
All right, that's beautiful. I'm going to, I hope, excerpt from your podcast just very briefly. Which podcast and what segment would you like me to share with the listeners here?
Well, it seems that people enjoyed episode 10 the most. That was the quantum mechanics special, and people seem to have just liked the quirkiness of quantum mechanics and having it explained to them. So probably something from episode 10 would be the best.
Very cool. It sounds like quantum mechanics is my target. Sounds like one I need to listen to.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting topic. I own many books about it and been interested in it probably for 4 or 5 years now. So it's something that I found extremely difficult just to explain on sort of a simple level. I mean, the books are incredibly complicated. They're written in really complicated language, and it's kind of like, it's just difficult to translate anyway, so.
Right. So now, you're a computer engineer. All this other science, where's that coming from?
Well, I have a general science background. When you start off in engineering, they sort of focus general, with all sort of biology, physics, all that type of science, as well just having a general high school background in it as well. But most of the stuff is just self-taught, just through books and reading, material on the subjects. And it's mainly, a lot of it is self-taught. I mean, like the quantum mechanics, you wouldn't really take that unless you were sort of in a really high level, theoretical physics program. So
really, truly.
Most of it is self-taught.
It's neat that you're able to share it. And I've been on your website, which I'll also share in my show notes, but there are quite a few comments about your making science understandable for those of us who may not have much science background.
Another focus of the Snacks in the Brain podcast in the past and hopefully in the future is educational change, and a lot of discussion going on about how we need to be able, how we need to be teaching our students to teach themselves,
right,
to be learners.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an excellent point. Yeah, absolutely.
David Warlick, Ian Jukes, those kind of guys are all always talking about the teacher needs to not be a teacher so much anymore as a facilitator of information skills.
Right.
It sounds like your background and yourself, your passion for teaching yourself, could stand to be a model for some of our students out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you you mentioned that, because I've had several professors just in my program, mentioning to us that really university is not necessarily supposed to be just a ground for learning what you're going to learn. It's also a tool to teach you how to learn on your own, because, I mean, with the way the world is changing, the way technology is changing, even in the workplace, I mean, you're always continually learning. You have to learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to assimilate information easily and, you know, apply it is a tremendous skill that's just critical to have nowadays.
The more we can model that for our kids, the better, especially since, what's the stat I saw recently? I think at Carl Fish's, he's a Virginia technology coordinator at his professional development site, that the information in the world is doubling at a rate of every 2 years now. And by 2049, it's going to be doubling every 72 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, I didn't hear that statistic. That's pretty astounding.
I'll have to send you a link to the PowerPoint presentation he did for his teachers as they came into staff development. David Warlick was talking about it at the Geeked podcast, that I guess this fellow didn't have the time he was usually allotted, and so he created an 8-minute PowerPoint, basically borrowing from Warlick's stuff and from Ian Jukes and from David Thornburg about education.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some pretty amazing stats there, that China's on the way to becoming the largest English-speaking country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And will be soon.
I don't know if actually you saw the news article, but there was actually an article probably almost a month ago now, but basically saying that the problem, there's a big crisis right now in the U.S. because a lot of the science is being outsourced. And you can even see that now in a lot of the higher educational institutes, that many of the professors are indeed, Asian or, definitely not, I guess what you would call American. They may have American citizenship, but oftentimes, they're not, like I said, what you would consider American. So this leads to their point, which was really that there's sort of a lessening almost of interest in science, and that it's, for a society that's moving, sort of towards the technological and scientific end of the spectrum, it's almost counterlogical for us to be losing interest in science, if you follow what I mean.
I follow it completely, and that's kind of what we do at the Center for Science Outreach, is try to get K-12 kids more interested in science and hopefully ways that they can relate to. We're talking about creating a new Vanderbilt School for Math and Science, which will bring public school students onto the Vanderbilt University campus once a week, all during the school year, and hopefully try to counter some of the backsliding we've had and interest in science over the past decade. It's pretty frightening if you actually look at the numbers of the drop-off of people going into sciences in college.
Yeah. That's a great venture in what you're doing there with trying to educate the young people and get them interested. I think it's really important.
Well, maybe we'll have to bring you in on that in some way.
Yeah, that would be great. I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but, I like to hear that all people are enjoying the show, but there's something specifically, rewarding when you hear that a young person is sparking an interest in science. It, makes it, you know, it's almost like passing the torch. It makes it very rewarding to know that the young generation, you know, there's still hope, and if we educate them properly, then they will, you know, still have interest in it.
It's a fascinating thing. Not being a scientist myself, you know, I guess I come from seeing the need, but in this podcast, I get to interview scientists at Vanderbilt, and, you know, I've interviewed cancer researchers and a researcher who's hot on the trail of a cure for AIDS with studying frog secretions.
Oh, wow.
That sort of stuff is just the whole notion of being an explorer and going to work and finding new things every day.
Yeah.
It's so stimulating to me. Sort of makes me wish I hadn't missed the boat myself, but I do love teaching little kids, which is the other thing I do.
Uh-huh.
Most of my...
Well, it's never too late. You haven't missed the boat yet, I mean.
There you go. Well, perhaps if I listen to enough of Brain Food, I'll get smart enough so I can be a better teacher. I want to thank you for coming in and joining us today, and I'm going to get to work on this podcast, and it'll be posted this week, I hope, and I'll send you an email when it gets posted.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you know, being on the show.
Wonderful. Do you have a favorite artist at the PodSafe Music Network?
Not.
I notice you use a lot of their music.
Yeah, not particularly. There's actually a lot of independent artists that I use, but it's actually quite amazing the music that they have available on there. That, you know, these.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
One reason I went to the longer format on Snacks to the Brain was to try to play more of that music. And now I'm going to be cutting the format back and doing maybe one or two songs, but I'm trying to do the whole song. So.
Yeah.
What's your favorite genre? Do you like classical, hip-hop, folk?
Well, for the show specifically, I try to use just sort of like down-tempo, techno, anything really without words that kind of, you know, I think sounds cool.
Cool. Well, I'll find a nice little techno-pop down-tempo thing to use for this show.
Okay, perfect.
Dedicated to you.
All right. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks so much for the conversation, Kyle Butler of the Brain Food Podcast.
Thanks a lot.
Listen up.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Bye now.
And here's what I found from the fabrication at music.podshow.com. A tune called Brain Cells.
You're listening to Snacks for the Brain.
Yeah.
Very interesting. From music.podshow.com, The Fabrications. I mentioned that I might excerpt a little bit from Brain Food, and I'm going to give you a little tease, and I'm so not going to complete the thought that Kyle completes in episode number 10 of Brain Food. Very fascinating stuff. Here's a little taste. That's why we call it Snacks for the Brain.
Where do you want to go?
This week, we will be taking an in-depth look at three fascinating topics from the world of quantum mechanics. I need to explain a few things here before we journey into our three complicated topics. The first is that things in the quantum mechanical world, the world of the very small, looks nothing like what we are used to. Things that seem impossible in the real world are commonplace in the quantum realm. The second thing to mention is that quantum mechanics is a very new concept in the timeline of science, and has had the majority of its development take place in the last century. This won't be a typical Brain Food show, and you may end up walking away with more questions than answers. You are about to enter a realm where the impossible becomes reality, where the weird and the strange take center stage. Welcome to the quantum realm. An Austrian physicist named Erwin Schrödinger introduced us to a classic thought experiment involving a cat. The paradox he presented us with is really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the realm of the very small. Imagine for a moment that we have a cat isolated in a box. Attached to the box is a system that can fill the box with poison gas, killing the cat. The system is triggered when it detects the decay of a single radioactive isotope. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago when we were discussing radioactive substances, we talked about the probability of them decaying being just that, probabilistic, meaning that in a certain time period, a radioactive isotope has a certain percentage chance to decay. Now, let's say we rig up our system with a radioactive isotope that has a 50% chance of having decayed after 1 hour. So if we check the system after 1 hour has passed, is the cat dead or alive? Assume we have not opened the box, so we haven't measured anything yet. The system hasn't been observed in any way. Is the cat dead or alive? Here's the paradox. Schrödinger said that the cat is both dead and alive at the same time. As strange as this might sound, it makes sense in a way. In the quantum world, nothing is definite, nothing is predictable. So we can't say with certainty whether the radioactive isotope has decayed or not. This led Schrödinger to introduce us to the superposition of wave functions. Essentially what this means is that when we have some sort of situation in the quantum world that isn't certain, we can have more than one state exist simultaneously. So if the system is unpredictable and random, and we haven't observed it yet, that's the key, I'll get back to that, then we can have more than one state existing. In other words, the cat is both dead and alive. Why is it key that we cannot have observed the system? Well, Schrödinger theorized that as soon as we open the box, we break down all the states, and one is forced to become reality. Think this is strange, impossible, makes no sense? What if I told you it's actually been proven? An English scientist named Thomas Young...
Wait, right there. We're going to stop right there, because that there is a taste, just a little snack. You need to go to Brain Food at www.brainfoodpodcast.com and check it out yourself or subscribe through iTunes. Links at the show notes site at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com. Check them out. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Homer, and thank you for downloading Snacks for the Brain. I'll see you next time.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO.
See ya!